Live from the First Midwest Bank State Street Studio.
Chicago's new home of the White Sox.
ESPN 1000, WMVP Chicago.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Welcome back in. You got Mark Zander, Brian Hanley, and we're so glad you're joining us on a Saturday morning. We're here for another hour. We're going to be talking to our buddy Jeff Dickerson, who was at Howell's Hall yesterday, because it was the moment a lot of Bears fans have been waiting for, even though it was the first day you're going to see Justin Fields with a football and a Bears jersey. But that's how much hope we have for the first round pick of the Chicago Bears. Hey, JD, how you doing?
Guys,
hey, JD.
The best part of yesterday, guys, was great to be with you. You didn't have to look very hard. You just had to watch one guy. He was wearing number one. That was pretty much it. And, you know, they only have two quarterbacks at rookie camp. It is Justin Fields and then Kyle Slaughter, who's like a veteran tryout guy. So there aren't a ton of other quarterbacks there stealing reps. So if you just watch Justin Fields the whole practice, you're going to be pretty good. And, look, again, it's rookie minicamp. No one's hitting, right? These are rookies. Defensively, they don't know what they're doing, really, for the most part. But in terms of his arm strength, you know, cutting through the wind yesterday, I have to say it was pretty impressive. He had one ball to Daz Newsome on a deep route that, I mean, was just a laser. And I think that would have beaten almost any defense, I felt. The way that he put the touch on that ball and the way that he threw that ball was such force. So, I mean, I would say day one was a good start, but again, it's rookie mini camp, so keep everything in perspective.
So you're saying I should keep the receipt and return the Kyle Slaughter jersey I bought?
What I'm saying, Brian, I think is Super Bowl, obviously, for year one for Justin Fields. Hey, look, but you know what? The great part is this, is that so many rookie mini camps are so dull and boring because if you take an offensive lineman in the first round, like, are you going to watch, you know, are you watching Chris Williams and Gabe Kareemi work the bag? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
oh, boy.
If you're taking a cornerback, if you take Kyle Fuller in the first round, it was a great player. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is at rookie camp, are you watching him backpedal, you know? Now you got someone to watch, and that's why this rookie camp, I think, is pretty good.
Gabe Kareemi, you pulled that one out of your hat or somewhere.
JD, when he had that deep pass, were you and others covering, looking at each other going, wow, all right, this may be it. This is good.
Well, I think when that ball was thrown, I was standing next to John Greenberg, Mark Potash, Jason Leisure, and we all said that was pretty nice. You know, I mean, it wasn't like shock and awe, but again, I have seen so many of these rookie mini camps where you see guys who you know just can't play, and Justin Fields can obviously play. How they harness that talent, how they develop him is a great story, and that's the one we're going to be following all year. But guys, in terms of just pure ability, I mean, he's got it. I mean there is, I think that's why it's okay to be excited, because this isn't really supposed to be a long-term project. I don't think they want to start him week one unless he is just so dominant between now and September that they have no choice. The locker room says they got to play him. I don't think that's their plan right away. But, I mean, you can see every ingredient you need is there. Now, whether or not it all comes together, hey, we got to see how that happens. But this is not a guy who you know, did not have a great college career. This is not a guy that is not a great athlete, that has made some great throws, that has played in some big games. Everything is there for him to be successful. Now it just has to happen.
So then, JD, I mean, that's, you just said it. He's played in big games. He said it yesterday. He's made for this. You know, this pressure is nothing new to him because he comes from Ohio State and then before that Georgia. And he oozes confidence. Now, how that translates into being the starting quarterback in the NFL for the Bears is going to, you know, time will tell. Never got that sense. We were talking earlier in the show. Never got that sense from Mitch Trubisky because, you know, he 13 games in North Carolina, basketball school. No, overdrafted, not his fault, but never got the sense that he was this confident guy who's going to command a huddle and command a city.
I just feel like if you're going to swing for the fences, right, swing for the fences on a guy like Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. I don't swing for the fences on Trey Lance. I don't swing for the fences on Kyle Wilson. These guys might be great players. But, again, I mean, I just feel like so much of success in the NFL sometimes is predicated on what you did in college. And you're talking about 2 years of one of the best programs in the country. playing the best competition, playing in national championship games, semifinal games, and not to dog Mitch, but yeah, I mean, Brian, you laid it out. It's just a completely different. It's a different circumstance here, and you know, with Mitch, the truth is, as we all know, you know, they did not want him to play right away. But you can thank Mike Glennon for that one. They screwed that one up by having Mike Glennon here. So he had to go in week five. Maybe it would have been a little different if he had a whole year to sit and wait. I don't think it would have been a lot different. Maybe a little different. But yeah, this is just, you just can't compare those two for a variety of reasons.
And JD, Brian and I were talking about how Pace was doing the overtime sell on Trubisky. And you notice here, he's just letting the situation speak for itself.
Because I don't think you have to sell Justin.
Right, you don't.
You don't have. I mean, what? Right. I mean, it's obvious. Again, like, you're talking about a guy that, what did he lose? Two games, I think, at Ohio State, right? I think two losses they had in his 2 years. The touchdown to interceptions was 63-9 or something crazy like that. I mean, if you watch college football and you're a college football fan, you saw Justin Fields on your television most Saturdays. You saw him because he was playing for one of the best programs in the country. You don't have to sell that. He didn't go to North Carolina is not a bad school. Don't get me wrong. It's not Ohio State. But, you know, he didn't go to BYU. You know, he didn't go to North Dakota State. I mean, everything is right there for you. Now, again, this all sounds great in rookie camp, right? But they still have to prove that they can develop this guy the proper way. And I think that's going to be – that's the story. I mean, all the tools are there. Now it truly is a matter of, can they put this whole, you know, group effort together with Nagy and all the coaches, and, you know, Dalton's going to do his part and Nick Foles is going to do his part, and can they get this guy to the point where he is an excellent starting quarterback within 2 years? Because, guys, I think 2 years is the benchmark here. In year two, if he's not playing very well and he's not your starting quarterback, which he'll be the starting quarterback, but if he's not playing well – then you're going to have some hard questions these guys are going to have to answer.
Well, JD, that said, you know, our first caller out of the box on the show this morning said he has no faith in the three guys to develop, Matt Nagy and Lazor and DeFilippo, to develop any quarterback. You know, if you don't have faith in that, then the Justin Fields you saw yesterday is the Justin Fields you're going to see in year two, and it's going to be up to him. I don't believe that necessarily. Whatever happened, and love to hear your take on if whether Matt Nagy failed Trubisky or Trubisky failed Nagy or it was just never going to work, you're starting with a much more polished product here with Justin Fields. So I have to believe that those three guys, just like on draft day, I had to believe that Nagy and Ryan Pace were going to get it right, and they did. Seemingly, they
as
jumped
long
up
as they
the
don't
guy.
Make it worse. And I don't think they can.
I understand. I mean, I am not going to criticize anyone who looks at this with a real kind of critical eye, because they have to prove that they can develop him. I mean, guys, it's been 70 plus years here, right?
Right.
I mean, they haven't developed a quarterback, no matter who's been sitting in the big offices at Hallis Hall. They have to prove they can do that. It did not work out well with Trubisky. It didn't work out well enough. And I think they've opened themselves up to that kind of scrutiny and that kind of criticism. So now it is up to them to show everyone that this plan is right. You know, they are very big on the fact that, you know, there are so many former quarterbacks with Nagy and DeFilippo and Lazor, guys that played quarterbacks when they were playing, and they really, again, think that Dalton's going to help Justin Fields, that Nick Foles, if he's still here, which they have given no indication he's not going to be, you know, that's a lot of money for a third-string quarterback. But again,
yeah, I believe that when I see it.
But Brian, I will argue this. Is there anything more important to the Chicago Bears franchise than developing Justin Fields? I would say no, right?
No.
There's nothing more important. And if that's going to cost you some money, a little more money than you would like to pay, and you can handle it with the salary cap, I think you might have to do it. So, again, we will see. That is, I think, a very fluid situation. But they just have to prove to people that they can get this right. If they get it wrong, now that would be something because, again, I'm telling you, this guy has all the ability. He just needs the coaching. And, you know, he talked to us yesterday before practice, and his big thing was – he wanted to, you know, crisp in and out of the huddle. And, you know, guys, in college football, teams don't huddle very much anymore, right? They get the signs from the sidelines and everything. It's different. I thought, just watching, that it was pretty clean. There weren't a lot of, you know, false starts by the offense. There didn't seem to be a lot of confusion. And so for rookie minicamp on day one, that's a win. No matter what, if you're going to go through rookie minicamp and have a pretty clean practice, no matter what year it is, that's a pretty good thing.
JD, we have a poll up on ESPN 1000 on Twitter, and we're asking, should he start game one somewhere in 21, or he doesn't see action in the first year? Let's focus on the last one. Is there any chance that he doesn't see playing time in year one?
I would say unless he's injured, I think he will play at some point in year one. Okay. I mean, I think what they'll do, guys, and what they can do is you can have a certain situations where he can come in the game. He can sort of be your Taysom Hill, for lack of a better analogy here. You know what I'm saying? And you guys know Nagy would love that, right? I mean, that's right up his alley to design a couple of wrinkles. He tried that with Mitch when Foles took over last year, if you guys remember. Mitch got hurt. That was the problem with that.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, but I think they do want to get him on the field, but they want to do it in a way where they know he's ready. Now, guys, listen, again, if between now and September we get to training camp, and we'll see what these OTAs look like, you know, how many guys show up, what the teams are willing to do. This is unfortunate for these younger players because there is that pressure, you know, to not attend the voluntary workouts, and we'll see what the Bears, how they handle it next week. But, I mean, if they get to training camp and every day he's just lights out and you just know. I mean, there's just – everyone will know when he's ready. And if he's just ready, well, then you owe it to the team to play him. But I think we're a long way to get to that point. And I don't think Andy Dalton is terrible. That's a real vote of confidence, isn't it, on a Saturday night?
Yeah,
I don't think he's terrible.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
I think he can keep this thing relatively on the tracks for 7-8 weeks until Fields is ready.
Okay, so you think he's better than what we saw from Foles?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And he's definitely better than Mike Glennon.
He's way better than Mike Glennon. Yes.
Well, hey, JD, to that point, and you just said it, and DeFilippo said it earlier in the week, it's that simple. When he's ready, everyone will know it. Now, it better be that simple. And if, in fact, he shows that to you before the first game of the season, you better not fail that locker room, because you saw how excited some of the Bears were on social media just on draft night when they selected him. You better pull the trigger on putting him in there when he's ready, because everyone in that building will know it. And you owe it to the team, as you said, to put the best guy out there, whether he's a rookie or not.
That's one thing, and you don't even have to play to feel it. Like, when you're just physically in the building, in the locker room, even as a reporter, you can kind of tell. I mean, you just know when a guy's got it, a guy's got it. You can just tell, and the rest of the team follows suit. So, yes, I think if he is just unbelievable and they know it, and Dalton doesn't look that great, and Foles is still here and is doing his thing, I think they will. But again, I don't think they anticipate it going that way. I think what they want, perfect scenario, and Ryan Pace alluded to this on draft night, perfect scenario is they get off to a good start. Dalton's playing fine. They're winning games, right? They're good. They're fine. And then you get to like week 9, week 10, and Fields has just been gaining and gaining and gaining and building more momentum, which is hard when you don't get those practice reps during the regular season. But at that point, like the Dolphins last year with Tua. Remember that? Remember they benched Fitzpatrick for Tua? Now, it didn't work out terribly well after they did that. But that, I think, is what they're talking about. And that, I think, to them would be the ideal scenario.
JD, you're the best. You're our Bears Sherpa.
Thanks,
so
buddy.
We appreciate your time this morning.
This is a labor of love, boys. I'm telling you, man. Rookie minicamp, talking about Justin Fields after all these boring minicamps.
Well, you've got to be very excited. We can tell you are. We all
ESPN
are.
ESPN called me 3 times yesterday. I thought they lost my number. I'm like, you guys know I still work for you, right? I mean, I do cover the Bears, right? And Bristol's like, the Bears? They're calling now for Justin Fields. Not for me, for Justin Fields. So.
Relevant again.
I'll
How about
take
that?
It.
Yeah, you're the man. Thanks, JD.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Jeff Dickerson, you heard from what he had to say about Justin Fields. We're interested in what you have to say about Justin Fields. 312-332-3776. Also, we're going to talk some Cubs and Chris Bryant and Lauri Markkanen. As he down to his final 2 games in a Bulls uniform, we'll talk about his future for the former first-round pick who we all had such great hope for. And we'll do that with Xander and Hanley right after this on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Bryant hits that one in the air, right field. That one going back on its way out of here. Wow, he goes the opposite way. Chris Bryant with his 10th homer of the year and his major league leading 24th extra base hit. The Cubs jump out. It is 2-0. KB goes Oppo.
Well, that's what Chris Bryant's been doing when he's healthy. And thankfully, after getting scared because he got hit by a pitch on his wrist after missing a couple days with an illness, Chris Bryant back in there pinch hitting and sending one over the wall, Mark Zander. And, you know, the numbers of Chris Bryant this season are surprising to me. And, you know, that might be surprising to say, given that what he was doing a couple of years ago when he's in MVP conversation. But no one seemed to really know what Chris Bryant was going to bring to the table this year, because last year he was unhappy and he was unhealthy and he was scuffling. And now he's batting .309, on base at .403, slugging .667, OPS .1069. And you just heard it, 10 home runs, 24 extra bases. And sad part is, as a Cub fan, he's not going to be here at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's impressive. And when they pulled him for that sickness and there wasn't really a lot of discussion as to what it was, I don't know what, you know, I'm a hockey fan, and usually when somebody gets pulled from a game like that, don't you think trade when nobody's talking?
I didn't, but I thought, you know, maybe COVID again. And here's, you know, a sidebar here is that the Cubs, every team in an MLB, if they 85% of their traveling party, players, coaches, traveling secretary, trainers, everyone gets vaccinated, then they can loosen COVID protocol. Mm-hmm. And it's loosening, you know, CDC is loosening it for everyone, thankfully, because a lot of people are getting vaccinated. But now the talk around the team is they're not going to get to 85%, that there are enough players, I would suspect players mostly, who are not going to get the vaccine, and they won't get to that plateau 85%. But that said, Chris Bryant got over the illness, got over getting the hit by the pitch, and was contributing again yesterday, as with Jake Arrieta. But that said, the Cubs are 18-19 to this point in the season. Does that excite Cub fans? One of our Twitter poll questions, because as you said, it's poll palooza here on our show today. At 18-19, are the Cubs overachieving, given your expectations into the season, when all the talk was about who's staying and who's going, or are they underachieving? Or your final option is wake me when Brian stealth. do you believe that he's not going to be dealt? It sure looks like they're hoping he keeps posting these numbers because they want to get whatever they can for him.
Yeah, that's the good and bad of it, right? KB is back. He's playing like we knew he could. It's been a few years because of all the things that we talked about, right? Nagging injuries. And now he's playing to a level to where they can really get something back to build for the future.
Well, you look at this. They're four games out, right? If the scenario plays out where they're leading the division or a game back or whatever, but you're now right up against the trade deadline, is it all about big picture and you're not signing him, you're not paying him what Scott Boras and Chris Bryant expect to be paid, even given the injuries and the decline the last couple of years? I think Scott Boras is still going to consider him an elite talent who should get paid as such. And we know Tom Ricketts has talked about how much money the team has lost. So of the suspects who may be on the trade block, Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, top three, I think Chris Bryant is the most likely to be dealt, no matter what he puts up and no matter what the team's doing by the time the trade deadline rolls around.
And there's no untouchables here.
No, but I mean, if you're trying to win a division and Chris Bryant's doing then what he's doing now,
right?
Tell me how you're going to win it without him.
You're not. Yeah. You're not. And that is really going to break the heart of Cubs fans. And we'll see where they are at that point. But you know what you were saying about Chris is that because he has, you know, returned to form, so to speak, he'd still, you know, he and his agent still want that big money. And yeah. I just don't think Ricketts is in for it. And is he overvalued?
Right now, Scott Boras thinks he's getting a $300 million 10-year deal like right. He thought about a few years ago. Then he's sadly
mistaken.
And that
doesn't seem right. That's not correct.
I mean, baseball isn't doling those things out like they used to either, by the way.
Right.
But given his injury history and given his struggles offensively, and here's a guy now playing outfield as much as playing third base, right? I mean, he was in center field too. And he's just, he seems happier. He's certainly healthier. And the numbers are where you would hope they would be any given season. But the sad part is, a Cubs fan, I don't think winning is the most important thing for them this year. I think it's all about, if they win the division, division's, you know, bad enough that they can still do it, they'll be happy to do so. But I think it's all about dumping salary and getting what you can. And I guess, Mark, my other question would be, what do you think you get, whether Chris Bryant's putting these numbers up or not, as a rental player? I mean, you know, how many teams out there? We saw the San Diego Padres were the only team really active in the offseason doing anything of note, right? Other than the Mets, maybe.
Yeah, the Mets were pretty busy as well.
Yeah, so I don't know the marketplace for Chris Bryant. You might be underwhelmed what's offered for Chris Bryant, even given the performance that he's had so far this season.
Well, everybody else is going to see the fact that he has history with injuries, and right now working with his agent, it might be a tough situation to navigate through.
Well, I don't think they're even working with Scott Boras. You know, the one thing about Baez is they seemingly were close to getting some done before the beginning of last season, and I'm not even so sure whatever numbers they were talking about are still on the table from the team's perspective this year, which makes you wonder, how long Javier Baez is here. But, that said, at least the Cubs are more entertaining to watch because Arrieta has been pitching well. Zach Davies is finally
Kimbrel.
Kimbrel. I mean, yeah, Jock Peterson's starting to dial in a little bit.
Yeah, he was 3-for-4 yesterday.
They've gone from barely averaging 5 hits a game to at least taking advantage of teams they should take advantage of, and occasionally having the offensive outburst where everyone's grabbing a bat and sending the ball over the wall.
Hey, Mike in Willow Springs wants to talk about KB at the deadline, maybe a move to the south side. Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I've been saying it for a couple of weeks since Robert went down, and I am a Cubs fan, but I do like the White Sox, and I wish them well. I want to be the first one to state the obvious. Bryant to the White Sox at the trade deadline. It only makes so much sense.
Yeah, but, on the South Side, we're concerned about what that would cost.
Well, sure, but you're a World Series contender, and Chris Bryant puts you in that conversation. I'm not sure they have the offense with losing Robert and Jimenez.
Well, so far, and that's not to say they're going to be able to keep this level up, but so far they have, and without home runs, for the most part. Not like they've been hitting them in the past.
Small sample size.
Yep.
Yeah, I wish him well, and I hope it happens.
Well, hey, just send Aloy and Cease back, and we can start talking trade. Yeah.
See, that's exactly what we're not doing, Brian. That's exactly. Thanks, Mike. And we've got Matt in Schaumburg wants to talk about KB. Welcome to ESPN 1000, Matt.
Hey, guys. I think that Chris Bryant, if he kept playing this way, he could probably get you a team's first or second best prospect and maybe even another top 10 prospect. What do you guys think?
Well, I think he probably could, but again, the person, the team who gets KB in return, they have to figure out the contract situation. And, that's got to be part of the equation, right?
Right. I mean, are they renting him for the balance of the season, or do they have the intention of re-upping him?
And certainly a rental situation, you're not going to pay that much for a rental situation.
For the rental situation, the way the Cubs could get more is if they're willing to deal June 1st as opposed to June 30th. So you're getting another extra month. But are the Cubs really willing to this early in the season pull that trigger?
At some point, they've got to figure out the jump.
Well, tell me where they're going to be in a couple of weeks on June 1st. And it might take some pressure off them, because if they start getting guys who you expect to contributing – and they, climb up a rung or two in the division. If you do it earlier than later, then you can say, well, we had to take the best deal. If you wait till trade deadline day and the team's actually in the middle of a division race, try selling that to the fans that you're trying to win something. By the way, Chris Bryant's been traded.
Well, it's going to be tough enough to see him leave in any way for Cub fans, but that would be the worst situation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 312-332-3776. Are you encouraged by what you've seen of Chris Bryant, or are you discouraged because, it just means that the clock is ticking that much louder and the price for a trade is hopefully going up if you're Jed Hoyer. 312-332-3776. Got Xander and Hanley. We're so glad you're with us here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
You know, I talk about it a lot. I used to hate the fact that I would top spin a lot of balls to left field in high school and college. But, you know, up here, I feel like, you know, when I'm a little early, I'm able to kind of stay through the zone and kind of just flip one over the third baseman's head. And I feel like I've done that a lot this year. So, and as you can see, my last at bat there, you know, I go the other way. I mean, obviously I hit a homer that way, but a line went out to right field. I can't put topspin on it to right field, so it kind of hangs up in the air there, and he makes a good play. So I was having a little fun with that. But I just feel like, you know, just like I said, staying through the zone, my swing, and kind of getting those you know, hits when I'm, you know, off time.
That's Chris Bryant, a very happy Chris Bryant. Sounds like he's much more at ease, Mark Xander, and he went opposite field for a two-run home run yesterday. He's 10th on the season, and here we are talking about what future he has left here in Chicago. And the other two guys who are in the conversation, whether they're staying or going, Anthony Rizzo and Baez, also a couple RBI yesterday. The Cubs a 4-2 winner over Detroit, and yet sit at 18-19 on the season. And the fact that Jake Arrieta is not overpowering Jake anymore, I think he tops out around 95 on the fastball, was good. He's efficient. He's not getting a lot of swing and misses, but he's not getting a lot of base traffic. So he's probably been your most consistent starter at this point on the north side.
Yeah, it's good to see. And I didn't know what to expect with his return, but I think it's worked out quite well. Kimbrel's closing out games. We've got Trevor Williams on the bump today. They're playing Detroit again. And, we'll see what happens. But Arrieta certainly has been more than serviceable.
Yeah, I'm with you. When they said he was coming back, I'm like, okay, I hadn't been watching a lot of Phillies baseball. I wondered what kind of speed he had left on the fastball. But one thing I knew about Jake Arrieta, and it's played out, you were going to get the best he had to offer. He was going to, I mean, he wasn't taking any days off. And by all accounts from teammates, it's the same Jake Arrieta work ethic, right? So he knows the fastball isn't where it used to be. So he's trying to find other ways to get guys out, and he's going to give you, I think he's had one clunker, right? And he had the cut on his thumb when he did, and Cincinnati made him pay for it. But yesterday, the thumb wasn't a factor, and he was good enough, and he's 4-3 on the season.
Pitchers that last long in major leagues, they have to adapt as they get older. That's part of the game.
For sure. And you know, talking about pitchers, we were talking about Kopech earlier in the show. And the idea that now we have seven-inning doubleheaders, even when they're split doubleheaders, you know, 7 innings, take 3 hours between games and bring a new crowd in because we need the money. Okay, that's all well and good. You still have to get 5 innings in to get a win, right?
Yep.
La Russa talked about it yesterday, too. It was asked, you know, Michael Kopech gives you 4 innings like he did yesterday, and he's not eligible to get a win, even though the game's only going 7. So why do you have to go 5 still?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's one of a few things that don't seem to really make sense in adjustments that Major League Baseball has put into play this year. Wondering what it's going to look like next year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean it's year to year, right? It seems.
It's month to month sometimes,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, here's a rule. We know what all the different rules are trying out at different levels of minor leagues, you know, with robo-umps and
some of that stuff
bases.
Is so scary. Although Fred's all about the robo-umps.
Well, yeah. What's up, Fred's can? Another segment. But bigger bases.
Oh, happy birthday to Freddie, by the way, today.
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah, happy birthday, Fred.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening. Throwing down a craft beer.
No, he's got White Sox Weekly.
Well, it's early enough.
Okay.
He's
breakfast
a pro.
Beer. That's
he's
fine.
A pro.
Yeah.
Breakfast beer. Our guy, Freddie, he's at some microbrewery putting together White Sox Weekly with Nursing One. You're allowed one for the breakfast.
Right.
Happy birthday, man. That's great.
Yeah, these rules that we've been talking about, Fred and I, a lot of these things, they don't make sense. And we're talking about the ones in the minor leagues now, the bigger bases, all of this stuff. And
moving the mound back.
Yeah, and I guess I applaud them for trying different things, especially down there. But some of the things that have made it here, still don't make sense. Not a big fan of the 10th inning rule, but I've heard the arguments for it. I don't know. Where do you stand on that whole thing?
I didn't like it when I heard they were going to do it. It is interesting how some teams decide, okay, they're going to put the guy on second. Our job is to get him over, get him in. So some teams are going to bunt him over and hope for the sack fly. Other teams are just going to be aggressive, right, and try to tack on runs. And so, I mean, that is kind of interesting. Paul Sullivan, our buddy at the Tribune, wrote a column today about other rules he'd like to see implemented. And one is limiting the number of shifts. He's not the first one to suggest that. But whether the number's 3, 5, you settle on something. But you can't be shifting every other at bat or every inning. So you have to pick and choose which guy you want to shift on and when you want to do it, because you're limited to, say, 3. I don't know if you like that.
No, you know why? I'll claim the old school card on this one. Hitters can adjust. If you shift on them, hitters got to learn to adjust. That's exactly right. I mean, that's been the rule for a long time. You know, the philosophy, hit them where they ain't. So I don't think that there should be a shift because at some point, if players start adapting, then the shift is going to lessen on its own.
How about this one? Sully proposed today in the column that since every umpire is not great at calling balls and strikes, and you're trying to get more contact, and you're trying to limit strikeouts, you want to actually, the likely event of a home run or a strikeout or a walk, you get your best umpires to be the guys behind the plate at all times. So each crew, you do evaluate them on a daily basis, and they get graded out. And so you have that information and data available to you. If you're MLB, you simply take your best ball and strike guys, and one is on each crew. And the wear and tear, I'm sure the umpires union want a say in this, but that guy calls balls and strikes every game.
Well, and maybe you have a 1 and 2, right? You've got the best one and the second best one, and maybe they can swap out. Obviously, Angel's one of those, right? No, not really.
But
Fred and I were talking about this a few weeks back. Do they have a grading system? Do these umps have to report to somebody? Do they have some
They're graded out.
Okay, but are they subject to, some very harsh criticism or I don't know what next level action against them, but we've seen some very poor performance. And I'm just wondering on the other side, because we never hear about this, what are they, what are their responsibility? What is, what are they graded by? And what can they be held to? Standard are they
held to? Is it more than just you missed X amount of balls and strikes and that's it? Like, is there nothing else on that conversation other than you missed these calls? Like, is there no punitive measure? That's why the idea, Brian, that you brought up about those who rate the best are behind the plate calling balls and strikes. And the union answer to that is if you grade higher, you get paid more because you're calling balls and strikes. Be better and up, get paid more.
Well, in the NFL, you have line judges and back judges, and you have the referee, right? I assume the referee's getting paid more than the line judge, right? So I'm with Mark, though. You would probably need 2 on a crew. So as it is now, you simply rotate. The guy who calls balls and strikes, next game goes to third base umpire goes to second, and on.
Right. The best 2 are rated, and you proceed as the rating dictates. And I would imagine that if you're behind the plate, you do get paid more because – if not, I would imagine some would be like, well, I got an easier assignment. I'm on the third baseline. I'm getting paid the same. I'm good. I don't need to be back there.
The wear and tear of being back there every single game. And look, they get vacations in season and all that. But if you have to be the guy squatting down every game because you're the best, there better be a premium based on it, because that is a hell of a lot tougher than, like you said, standing at third and hoping the foul ball doesn't kick up chalk and you have to make a decision.
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting. It's not really, we don't know enough about that process, it seems.
Well, yeah. And I'm sure that has something to do with the union. That's a very strong umpire union, as we've seen over the years. So a lot of the dead weight can stay around for 25 years and go through the motions and be among the lowest graded and still show up every spring training, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Does anybody like Angel Hernandez? I'm sure his family members.
I hope his family does. I'm sure he's right. Probably a nice guy.
I'm sure he is. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, Joe West, he has a family, right? And they probably like
it. There's another one.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. Speaking of guys you like, do you like Lauri Markkanen? And are you going to like him just for two more games in a Bulls uniform? We'll talk about when we come back. Xander and Haley, ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Welcome back in ESPN 1000. Mark Xander, Brian Hanley, glad you're with us this morning. Talking sports with you, 312-332-3776. And we will be talking about Lauri Markkanen for at least another couple days, Mark.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. We'll see what uniform he's wearing next time around.
Boy, we have a Twitter poll question out there. Lauri Markkanen, the best or the most likely scenario for him is that the Bulls will keep him around and sign a new contract, something they didn't do last season, that they will have a sign and trade deal and try to get something in return, that they will match an offer sheet because he's a restricted free agent, or they will simply let him walk after this season concludes in two more games. And think about this, that Jimmy Butler trade with Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, and then you get Lauri Markkanen in the draft. And think a pretty good haul for Jimmy Butler. Maybe he's still not good enough, but now with Dunn out of the picture and Markkanen pretty much out the door, Zach LaVine for Jimmy Butler and Justin Patton. How'd that look for you?
Oh, wow.
I mean, as good as Zach LaVine is, an all-star Zach, and you like, you know, to build around Zach, and I know Cap loves Zach more than Zach's parents, maybe, but that's what it comes down to, because Lauri Markkanen has regressed. He's been hurt, but, you know, talk about a guy who, as a rookie, gave you so much hope that he was going to be a guy that you had one and 1A with Zach and Lauri Markkanen, and you're going to build around that. But new front office, new blood in the Bulls brass, but certainly disappointing to see Lauri Markkanen's Bulls career seemingly come to a close the way it has.
Well, do you think that maybe he needs another year under Billy, or are we ready to cut bait?
Well, I mean, he still is, his agents, they still want to be paid, right? Now, so I'm just connect the dots. He's gone from power forward to small forward, from starter to off the bench, and Billy Donovan yesterday talking about what a great teammate is and he is, and how hard he's worked, and he hasn't, you know, rocked the boat at all. That all sounds like a guy who's, you know, more than knows the handwriting's on the wall. And
he's pretty much thanking him for his service.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, he's done what we asked of him, and unfortunately, if he had been the Lauri Markkanen a few years ago, we would have been asking how much you want to get paid for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, if you want to jump in, 312-332-3776. As you mentioned, this is actually a Twitter poll, and we can go to Eric to see how it's looking as we're here just another 5 minutes or so. How does that one look, Eric?
All right, so is what is most likely for restricted free agent Lauri Markkanen? With 5%, a new deal with the Bulls. With 7%, the Bulls match the offer sheet that he will get out in the market. With 34%, sign and trade, and 53% say the Bulls will just let him walk.
And yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm pretty much of the let him walk crowd. And it will be interesting to see if he turns into anything, if he can stay healthy and he can start
anew somewhere.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, instead of regressing, if he can actually get, you know, kind of off this treadmill he's been on and actually become anything close to what we saw a few years ago. And then you'll think, as a Bulls fan, what might have been. But I think most Bulls fans have seen enough. And I think ownership in the front office probably seen enough too, Mark.
Right. And the fact they're eliminated now, they no chance at the play-in. They're done. Now we have to concentrate on the draft.
Yeah. And you know, that they... The surprise they pulled on trade deadline day should give you encouragement that they know what they're looking at. And Vucevic has been terrific, and no one saw that deal coming. And here's hoping that they can, you know, pull a couple of hats of surprises out of draft day as well.
Right, right. It was a very bold move, and I like that aggressive nature, and it seems like we've got the right people in the right place. It is going to take time.
We had a few other Twitter poll questions as well, one pertaining to the White Sox and the MVP to this point in the season, Eric Ostrowski. How's that one coming in?
All right, so who is the MVP so far? With only 4%, Michael Kopech. With 22%, Tim Anderson. With 28%, Rodon. And Yermin Mercedes with 49%.
Wow. And here's a guy, Mark, that a few weeks ago, Tony La Russa said, well, I mean, he could keep doing this, but it didn't even sound like the manager was sold on.
Well, you're not even sure, right? It just seems so out of left field, pun not really intended. But the point is, he was not even on the radar. Then all of a sudden he shows up and it's like, okay, this has got to level off at some point. Well, thankfully, knock on everything, it hasn't. So he is the big story, but we can't forget about Rodon, because Rodon barely made the team. It was him and Reynaldo Lopez. And, they were saying Reynaldo looks good, and then all of a sudden Rodon made it, and Reynaldo did not. He's down in the minors. So that is a crazy story, too. So we have two very interesting storylines happening this year, and obviously the interesting but not so favorable storylines are the injuries. But it's nice to see what's happening with Mercedes. So I'm not surprised.
And how interesting are the Cubs at 18 and 19? We had three selections. Are they overachievers? Are they underachievers? Or do you just want to be woken up when Chris Bryant's dealt? How'd that come in, Eric?
18% of the voters say that the Cubs are overachieving.
Ooh.
40% say they're underachieving. And 42% are sleeping and ready to be woken up when Bryant's dealt.
And tell me what you get for the guy. I mean, tell me what you get for the former, superstar on the north side. Tell me how that looks. What haul you got in, and I'll tell you whether it was worth it or not.
Yeah, that's the real interesting part about this. We pretty much think he's gone. What is going to happen in return?
And we saved the best for last, because yesterday was Justin Fields' day, even though he was throwing to a bunch of guys who won't be able to pick out of a lineup.
Just playing catch.
Soon. Yeah. And it's Justin Fields. The best thing for his development, the new franchise quarterback for the Bears, is to start day one, start sometime this season, or wait till next year. And the answer is?
Wait till next year got 12%. Start first game got 37%. And start sometime in this season got 50% of the votes.
Yeah.
Mark, you're in that.
Yeah,
this year.
Finally.
And
I line up with the poll. Yeah. Well, look, it's a ever-changing story. And I may change my tune as we get here, get closer to the season. But I think, right out of the gate, we don't need to do that, so let's not do that. Let's just take her easy, and we'll see him soon enough.
Well, hopefully we're not only going to see him soon enough, but it's going to be worth the wait no matter how long that is.
Well, I think we can be rest assured it will.
Hey, always have a blast talking sports with you, Mark.
Absolutely, Brian.
Eric Ostrowski for doing all the great production work and keeping us on track. And
thanks,
keeping
E-Dog.
Us involved. Yeah, you're the man. And thank you for listening. Most importantly, we have White Sox Weekly coming up with Jeff Meller and Fred Huebner later on in the day. And you got Sox pregame and Sox Royals right here on the home of the Chicago White Sox. So thanks for listening. And we will talk to you sooner than later on ESPN 1000.